Hello, you are listening to The Point of Pittsburgh, a program about Western Pennsylvania's laborers and their history. And we have our resident historians and experts, Charles McAllister, former director of the Labor Studies Center at the Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and Rosemary Trump, former executive vice president of Service Employees International Union. Charles, what's piqued your interest over the last week or so about the Point of Pittsburgh?
Well, there's been so much controversy and feeling and passion about, you know, the Confederate statues, which are very, very understandable. But as someone who's put up probably 25 state historical markers around the state, I'm really interested in the issue of the weight of history and remembering stories that can help us advance, not the ones that can set us backward. And there was a very interesting, I think, an important exchange in the paper. One of the statues, one of the things that has been raised here locally was a statue, actually I think a very beautiful statue, of Stephen Foster out in front of the Carnegie Library. And at his feet, sitting on a chunk of stone, is a black African-American banjo player. And it's so the exchange that took place, there's people who have said, you know, this is a degrading picture of like old Black Joe, you know, and this white guy, you know, writing down, taking away the knowledge or the songs, the art of the African-Americans. And it was really moving, I think, in both directions to see two letters there, one from Larry Glasgow, arguably the premier historian of black culture in Pittsburgh, from the University of Pittsburgh, the biographer of August Wilson, and a wonderful human being. He defended the statue and said that Foster's respect for black folks and their culture and their music was genuine, and that the racists who came after in minstrel shows took Foster's music and turned it into horrible racial parodies was not Stephen Foster's intent or anything we can hold against him. And he said that the African-American playing the banjo is not looking up like adoringly at Stephen Foster, but is looking out to the heavens and is a man of substance. So he said he takes his classes down there and they talk about this statue. Well, right under that letter is a letter from the ancestors of Stephen Foster, who you would think that the black guy would be saying, take the damn thing out, and then his family coming in and say, keep it there. They say, you know, given the racism in this country, which we detest and despise, we think they should remove the statue. I mean, I was so proud of Pittsburgh here. I mean, you know, I thought that this out of the two came, and I wrote Larry, I said, boy, I appreciated what you wrote there. I should send something to the other folks too. But I said, what would be maybe appropriate? I'd love to see a explanatory, you know, plaque that's had these two letters there and explaining who they were, and then under it saying, however, this does say something about the exploitation of black art and culture and music by entrepreneurs, most often white, who made a lot of money off of these folks and never gave them either credit or compensation. So there is a lesson to be learned in the 20th century about this, but it's really not. And poor Stephen Foster died totally a pauper, an alcoholic, and certainly never exploited the music of those people. It was a tribute to him. And so I think it's really important to recognize that there are some good stories around, and my the salute goes out to both sides here, the family who was willing to give it up in the name of racial harmony and the African-American historian who was willing to defend Stephen Foster. And I thought it was very moving.
Well, and to fast forward, 150 years, I mean, you know, it is tragic that, you know, the African-American was not rewarded for his music or given the appropriate For his music at that time. And of course, African Americans are still struggling with that issue today. But it is better because there are unions now for songwriters and musicians of all races and of all colors. And the insistence upon having those rights protected and to receive monetary payment for when their music is played. And the moral of the story is that Stephen Foster, had he written those songs today, he'd be a very wealthy man. And
with Afro representing him.
Right, as a result of having written so many hit records, and rightfully so, that there was that without unions in the music industry, without unions in the football, basketball, the major sports industries, without unions in the manufacturing industries, all of us would be enslaved or living at slave wage levels and in poverty. And so the moral of the story is that what we need to start commemorating are all the men and women, the thousands and thousands of men and women, if there were ever statues to be erected, should be erected to those who've given their lives for the cause of labor and for the cause of improving society and the cause of creating a more just world. And that that those are the people that should be recognized are those who have given so much in terms of either their lives or their jobs or their sacrifice in terms of time, volunteer time, to help make it a better workplace, a more healthy workplace, a safer workplace, a better remunerated workplace, and for all those who are struggling today to keep unions and to build unions and to make our civilization more responsive to the 99% and are fighting the 1% who want to take us back to the 1850s and 60s and 70s and the 19th century conditions, and we're not going to let that happen. So that's what I'm would like to add to this story of, you know, symbols, is that if we're really going to honor symbols, let's have that discussion about those who have not been yet recognized for their contributions for the welfare of our nation.
It illustrates to me, Charlie and Rose, the power of looking back and understanding our history as part of understanding the present and understanding what we need to do in the future. And if these symbols become, as they should be, occasions for discussion and learning and debate about what they represent, mm-hmm. They can truly begin to change lives. And rather than interpreted as exclusive symbols only for a certain portion of our society, mm-hmm. rather than for all of our society. So,
absolutely, I think that that it should be recognized that when you put a monument up or a statue up, that you really should need to find a way in which to have that discussed from all points of view, and for people to learn from one another so that we can move forward into the future, is to examine, you know, in historic terms, what is the meaning of that statue and how does it apply today and where do we want to be in the future?
Let's talk some more about that after we take a break, and we'll come back and talk some more on The Point of Pittsburgh with Charlie McAllister and Rosemary Trump. I'm John Hare.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You're bringing your daughter to her favorite pop star's concert. Do you A, wear earplugs?
Isn't this fun, Dad?
have a soft pretzel.
B, remember the moment with matching concert t-shirts.
That's going to be $180.
Or we can just take a photo.
C, show her how you used to do concerts.
We're going crowd surfing!
I can't, it's too heavy.
Oh my God. Ah.
Or D, just roll with it.
Woo, Justin, look at us, we're over here.
Justin, OMG, he just looked, I love you, Justin. I love you.
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit adoptuskids.org/AL. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hope you enjoyed your meal. And I just want to say, he's lucky to have a brother like you.
Lucky? Caring for my brother is far from easy. But he's a part of me, like my arms and legs, so I'll be his. No time for tired. Nothing can disable this love. He needs me, but I'm the lucky one, even though I need help now and then.
If you're caring for a loved one, visit aarp.org/caregiving for care guides and community. Support for your strength. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Point of Pittsburgh, a discussion of our wonderful labor history and its consequences for today with Charles McAllister, former head of the Labor Studies Center at the Indiana University of Pennsylvania, also past president of the Battle of Homestead Foundation here in Pittsburgh, and Rosemary Trump, former international vice president of Service Employees International Union, longtime board member of the Battle of Homestead Foundation. And in our first section, we were talking about the Stephen Foster statue and the discussion around its relevance and meaning. And it was a very, very interesting discussion. But we also have some events that we wanted to tell our listeners about. And Charlie, this coming Saturday, the 26th, there is an event at the Pump House in, at the waterfront in Homestead. And it's a very interesting event that harkens back to the 1892 strike at the Homestead, the Battle of Homestead.
Right. Trilby Bush, in the title of the book, I've read it,
Darkness Visible.
Visible. I was thinking Darkness Rising. Yeah. Darkness Visible. I knew that was wrong. But no, Trilby Bush, a very interesting book, very different than any other, that from the point of view of the approach, the kind of social class that it looks at during the strike, which we tend to see everything in terms of Carnegie and Frick and those big guys downtown versus the working class who fought the battle and try to preserve their jobs and their skills and their livelihood against Carnegie's attempts to cut their wages in half, basically, and reduce their power on the shop floor. But there were a lot of other folks in town, and she's a direct descendant and of people who were there. And she writes a story about basically a young man from she deals with two ethnic groups, the Welsh and the Germans. And the Welsh are very important. In fact, just to mention quickly in passing, is that in early, mid-September, and we'll at a future time, we'll talk about it, but Welshmen who brought the puddling furnace was the primary, the only way, really, or certainly the dominant way of making iron from 1817 till the Homestead Works and Braddock took over with steel until the 1890s, and all the Civil War production was iron. And it was out of the Welsh experience, and there's wonderful scenes in Wales and conflict between a minister and his son, who he wants the kid to be a minister like him, and he revolts. He's a free thinker, and they have a terrible fight. He comes to America, ends up at Homestead, where he has to confront working in a mill, and these tough Eastern Europeans and Italians and all kinds of people he doesn't know, and he has a real hard time, and he's not he's a guy in good condition, etc., but he's not used to the ardors of the mill. And it's a story about the family, about the strike, about some of the family being very pro-workers, others being more tied to management. It's about a doctor in town, German. That's the other side of Trilby Bush's family. And he's a professional, and he's a person who's loved by the community, and he's very torn and very much on the side of the working people in the town. And it's a very interesting view. I mean, I know I've read an awful lot about the strike, but you tend to see it in terms of bipolar. And this is very much of the kind of the professional class, the more educated people who were caught in the middle of this thing and had generally sympathies with the workers, but some of them had very strong ties to the management. That's where they got their living. So it's a very interesting. She's going to be there, and she's bringing out folks who are her descendants of the Homestead strike, I believe, in the discussion. So it's going to be a very interesting session.
This is a historical novel. And while the characters are fictional, they are it's so well researched and based on stories that descendants tell about the time that it's a fascinating story and very likely the most realistic recreation of events at the time that one can imagine. And there will be at least five locals who are descendants of people that they know participated in the strike and have passed those stories on for the from the years from the 150
right,
years
including
ago.
George DeBolt, who right. runs DeBolt Bus Company, Transit
and,
Company, or whatever.
And a number of other folks that want to tell the stories that have been passed on from their families. One of them were descendants of one of the workers that was killed during the event. So it'll be a very interesting discussion, I believe, at 2:00 at the Pump House in the Waterfront. So that event is happening this Saturday, the 26th.
And we do hope you come. You know, we've had very successful programs, and we'll be able to tell you at that event about others, and including in future radio programs. But I did want to touch on a shout-out to our Attorney General, Shapiro, for doing great work on and you know, there's going to be 1,200 Pennsylvanians that are going to be happy with their government and having paid their taxes. Because they're to get relief for their tuition payments that they gave to a private corporation, a private education company, one of those switch and bait companies that say, hey, give us, you know, this large tuition payment, we'll guarantee you a job, we'll give you the training for that job, even though you'll have to take out a loan and pay an exorbitant amount of interest on that loan in order to get your tuition paid to us. And I'm talking about a settlement that was made by several states against a company by the name of Equitas Capital Management. And they used a company locally called Corinthian that allegedly would have educational programs, and it, as I said, it turned out that that it was primarily a situation where they preyed on students that were desperately in need of good employment, thought that they could sign up for technical skills, and the company represented that, oh, we'll find you work, and it turns out that most of that did not happen, and as a result of their failure to provide, make good on their promises and their representations, Attorney General Shapiro was able to be a part of, filed suit on behalf of those students that live in our state and are to get a $6.7 million settlement to repay those loans of these underserved students by this for-profit college. So once again, you know, we talk about, you know, privatization. Well, one of the things you've got to worry about and when you deal with the private sector is, do they represent what, in fact, they're going to provide? And that's the question that I have. And
they were federally backed loans, I presume, or state backed loans, right, and that's right. The reason why the state attorney general can be a party to the suit.
Right.
So again, it's the direction of our public dollars. At least now we have some enforcement of the right. correct use of our public dollars as well.
Exactly. And however, there is a however. Now that we have a new administration in office, namely the Trump administration, he appointed a woman by the name of Betsy DeVos to be our education secretary. And it turns out that Betsy DeVos wants to take away those regulations protecting the rights of students to make those claims against for-profit higher education.
Like Trump University.
Seriously. And so now Attorney General Shapiro, and again, hooray for you. Thank you, Mr. Public Official, on behalf of Pennsylvanians. Thank you for protecting our rights as consumers and as potential students and protecting our right of fair play. The lawsuit challenges Betsy DeVos and the Department of Education's decision to abandon federal rules protecting college students from abusive loan practices by higher education institutions like Carithian. So he's basically saying, don't do that. You shouldn't do that. It's illegal to do that. And please withdraw your insistence that regulations not be held to protect the right of consumers and students and young people.
And thank you, Rosemary Trump and Charlie McAllister. We're appreciative of your comments on the Point of Pittsburgh, and we'll be back next week with more Point of Pittsburgh, and we hope to hear you then. So I'm John Hare. You've been listening to The Point of Pittsburgh.